Of course, there was a massive problem for many years already with sleeper cells of the Taliban inside the Kabul former government's administration, as well as the security forces. If you remember a few years back, there was this big issue of blue on green, green on blue attacks, which means the Taliban infiltrated training centers of the police and the military and then shot the international advisors. This was a big issue, but this was only the most obvious expression of the fact that the Taliban managed to actually infiltrate the Kabul administration. So this is uncontestable, and the article is right in pointing out that they were able to manage to infiltrate not only several ministries, but also the intelligence services. Now, in a war situation, this is not particularly unusual. You will always have sleeper cells. What is unusual is the extent and the patience through which these infiltrations were done. If you read through some of the stories in the article, they span years before the person is placed. So this is actually a far more professional approach that even I would have thought the Taliban being possible. Now, these individuals who then outed themselves as Taliban after the takeover, certainly in some aspects prevented things from happening that would have happened. The destruction of files, for example, in the intelligence services, apparently to a certain extent was prevented by these sleeper cells. But were they pivotal in the fall of the government? No. They were, of course, helpful in the fall of the government. But what is absolutely undeniable is that before the fall, and what really tipped the balance, is that the former warlords, the really heavyweights in the Kabul system, Ismail Khan, Muhammad Atta, Dostum, all made their private deals with the Taliban in the summer of 2021, which then led to a complete breakdown in the power balance of the Kabul government. Couple that with the withdrawal of the Americans, and I'm quite sure these deals were done because they knew the Americans and the internationals were going, that led to the breakdown of the entire system. So these sleeper cells didn't bring about the fall of Kabul, but certainly when Kabul was falling, it certainly helped them to maintain some of the stuff they wouldn't have gotten their hands on otherwise. You know, obviously, if a government falls, first thing you do is destroy all the files in the security process so that your sources on the other side, where there was also sleeper agents of the Kabul government side within the Taliban, that these don't get discovered.
So how, back to the Taliban and what they did and how they did what they did, how were they able to spend years doing this? What did the people that they recruited to be these sleepers, what did they do? How did they hide themselves for these years?
Yeah, by not being active in favor of the Taliban at all. So according to the article, and I believe the information sounds very credible, the Taliban built up these agents for a long time. I.e., they were not advocating for Taliban positions. They were not counteracting while they were in these ministries, the actions of the government. They simply worked as part of the government administration, waiting for the day to come. Now, this is a very professional intelligence methodology that takes a lot of experience and a lot of help. And I don't think a militia structure like the Taliban without outside help, and I'm here clearly looking towards the eastern border of Afghanistan, yes, where the potential help could have come, yeah, would be able to set up. You see how they govern now, and this is quite bad. Governance, as in policing the country, as in managing any aspects of government at the moment, is tricky to a disaster. And given this, I don't think that on the intelligence side, without outside support, the Taliban would have been able to pull something like this off.
You said looking at the eastern border of Afghanistan, are you speaking specifically about a certain country named Pakistan?
Yes, I think because, I mean, clearly, you know, and that was depending on the day, Pakistan and the mood of the Pakistani officials, sometimes they admitted that they do, sometimes they denied that they do, but there was never really a clear separation from Pakistan of the Taliban. There was a reason why the various shura of the Taliban were called Peshawar Shura, Miranshah Shura, and Quetta Shah Shura. Now, these are three cities in Pakistan, and there is a very good reason why these shuras were named after these cities for the last 20 years, right? So, yes, there was always a connection. There was always part of the Pakistani government that played for the other team. And the ones that they played particularly intensively with was the Haqqani network.
This suggests to me that we really did not understand, the U.S. that is, what it was that the Taliban were doing there. I mean, if this kind of thing was underway and they were able to successfully surprise the U.S., which is seems like that's what happened with the way they overran Afghanistan. And as you said, the sleepers were just a part of it. But that's a very significant part of it. And I just wonder what else we don't know about the Taliban that they have underway that may be of significance and significant importance when it comes to things like terrorism, for example, Hans.
Yeah, I don't think it's a fundamental issue of not understanding. I mean, obviously, the U.S. administration, both George W. Bush as well as the Obama administration, were sometimes very clear that, you know, what the role of Pakistan was here with the Taliban. But because of the limited option and because they had these connections with the Taliban, there was always this attempt to work with Pakistan. Also to hopefully encourage those within the Pakistani government who weren't really keen on working with the Taliban and help them to mitigate the threat that comes from the other part of the government. Obviously, ultimately, this didn't work. Also, I think everyone misunderstood or underestimated, A, the willingness of the Taliban to actually make deals. To be honest, I think I said this in a conversation with you before, Dostum, who without batting an eyelid was absolutely willing to kill 1,000 Taliban in the most cruel way in 2001, I would have never, ever imagined that the Taliban would ever be willing to make a deal with this man, simply because, I mean, of his history with the Taliban. But they did. So we underestimated, and I think everyone underestimated, that these guys, Dostum, Atta, Ismail Khan, would be willing and accepted by the Taliban to make a deal. And it was absolutely clear, however, if these guys leave, the game is over. So, you know, at the latest, in late summer, before August, when you saw all of the deals being negotiated, it was definitely clear that this is going to end very, very fast.
You know, I've heard in recent days that a number of Afghan troops or former Afghan military personnel have disappeared or have been killed. And I'm wondering, do you think these sleepers had anything to do with identifying these people?
Oh, 100%, of course. But I mean, apart from them, this is a Human Rights Watch report. Apart from them, of these security forces, guys in the northern, eastern and southern provinces actually had surrendered themselves to the Taliban. And of course, the Taliban broken the promise that they made us. They have already broken many of the promises that they wouldn't retaliate, and they did, right? So 47, I think, confirmed cases and 53 suspected cases of people just disappearing or actually being, you know, verifiably executed by the Taliban. This also comes down to promises the Taliban, in inverted commas, are making, because the Taliban don't exist. There are Taliban factions. So if you talk to a minister in Kabul, his ability to guarantee you anything like non-retaliation or girls being able to go to the school go as far as his internal network is concerned. And it doesn't relate to anything else. So if he's from Kandahar, he may be able to guarantee this for Kandahar for you for the time being until some more radical Taliban comes and tells him that this is not part of the program. And then the promise is night. So that's the problem with promises or, you know, willingness to undertake things that the Taliban say they would, because it's not a hierarchically organized organization where on the top you have the head of the government and the ministers, and then down the line for the rest of the country, orders are followed. No, within the Taliban, it is always a negotiation, and it is the problem of the concept of a moderate extremist that is impossible. In any extremist organization like the Taliban, the most extremist elements will ultimately always prevail. So, you know, promises of non-retaliation, promises of women's rights or girls' education are simply not enforceable by the Taliban. They sound nice, but they don't have the internal ability to enforce this ultimately.
Dr. Hans Jacob Schindler, Senior Director at the Counter-Extremism Project. J.J. Green, WTOP News.